This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In Gaza, the United Nations says civilians are collapsing in the streets due to hunger and say there's no place for them to evacuate as Israel steps up military operations. The Hamas-run health ministry says hospitals have recorded 15 deaths in the past hour due to malnutrition. ABC's Tom Sufi Burich has more.
We're hearing within the last hour a statement from Doctors Without Borders. They say that injured people aren't getting enough food to heal. They say their staff are exhausted and hungry too. We're hearing from the French news agency AFP saying they, for the first time in their history covering conflicts right throughout the world, fear for their staff because of potential famine.
Todd Blanche, the deputy attorney general for former defense attorney for President Trump, says he plans to meet with Ghislaine Maxwell. She is the ex of Jeffrey Epstein, serving a 20-year prison sentence for sex trafficking. The House also trying to depose Maxwell for the case. Stocks today ending mixed. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Search efforts are intensifying for a missing La Crosse woman. 22-year-old Elliot Hines was last seen Sunday morning walking on the 500 block of Front Street South. La Crosse police are asking for the public's help in finding her. On Monday, search operations included drones by air, dive teams by water, and emergency responders by land in the area she was last seen. Hines is 5'4" and weighs about 120 pounds and was last seen wearing a white t-shirt and jean shorts. Anyone with information is asked to call the La Crosse Police Department. The La Crosse County Board approved a measure to accept $350,000 in state grant money for the Pathways Home Program. The measure, which was previously also approved by the La Crosse Common Council, will provide funding to hire an additional social worker and help with housing assistance, treatment plans, and supplies. Funding for the grant runs through 2027. To date, the Pathways Home Program has aided in housing over 150 people, in addition to providing other services for people who are experiencing homelessness. City officials will continue hearings for property owners who are objecting to their property assessments today. According to city documents, over 30 different property owners are contesting their assessments. It's not just residential homeowners either. Businesses are also on the schedule for objection hearings during the four-day process. On Thursday, the Citizens Board of Review went over the procedure for contesting real property assessments ahead of the objection hearings, which are scheduled to wrap up on Tuesday. Hot weather settles in for the next several days. Highs today will be around 90 with slight chances of scattered thunderstorms. Tomorrow will likely be the hottest day of the week with highs well into the 90s and heat index values in the triple digits. Thursday is our next best chance of rain with highs back down in the 80s across the Cooley region. It stays hot into the weekend with high temperatures close to 90 and slight chances of scattered rain showers. We'll have more details in our Civic Media forecast. You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now from your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Football starts tomorrow. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, Packers training camp beginning tomorrow morning at 10:30 with the first of 11 practices open to the public, three preseason games, followed by the 17-game regular season schedule. The Packers signing right tackle Zach Tom to a four-year deal, including a signing bonus of over $30 million, the most ever for an offensive lineman. NBA, Chris Paul will join the LA Clippers and Brooke Lopez. The Bucks had shown interest in Paul earlier this summer. Baseball, the Brewers and Mariners again tonight in Seattle. The Brewers with a 6-0 win over the Mariners last night, their 11th win in a row. How did they go from fourth place to right now the best record in baseball?
I think you got to understand that this is a bunch of people that, you know, have gotten to this point and just kept clawing away. You know, they're hungry. I'm really, really proud of them, but we got work to do to improve in every area we can, but we can at least feel like we're capable.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with a slight storm chance and a low in the mid-70s. Heat advisory tomorrow, heat index approaching 100, high-low 90s, a mix of sun and clouds, scattered storms. Storms still possible on Thursday. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been trying to learn sheepshead for 40 years. My father-in-law is still a card counter, knows what everybody has. It is so easy to go, oh gosh, I still don't know who the partner is. And is that a trump card or is it not? And so I'm still asking myself all these questions while they're busy taking all of my nickels. The one thing that got me where they allow me to play is getting the app. For all the technology that's out there, that is one of the positive notes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll be talking about the University of Wisconsin system and K-12 public education with Trigby Olson as guest host, State Senator Keller Royce, and Reed Galen. Join them.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Eagle, 1490 AM.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to have what I'm going to call the conversation of the moment. And the conversation of the moment is at face. We're sort of at the very introductory course level is, should Governor Evers run for another term? And was the compromise biennial budget in Wisconsin a good compromise or a bad one? That's what it is about in for the next 5 minutes, right? But the big conversation, that what those questions are actually about, is we have an existential threat in Donald Trump. It's a corruption existential threat. It's a rule of law existential threat. It's a small d democracy existential threat. It's a, does the United States still command any cadre or respect on the world stage? It's a global economic existential threat. But it's also an existential threat in each and every single one of our communities. What will the big, brutal bill bring? We know it will bring pain, but how acutely will it be impacting our families across the state of Wisconsin? And what do we do about it moving forward? These aren't questions with easy, ready-made answers. And as I discussed with my first guest today, Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, there's literally a headline every day, a discussion on every talk show about how do Democrats unite to meet this moment, to keep their big tent big, maybe even expand it to include good faith conservatives who, if they picked up all of the things that, for example, the Democratic primary winner for the New York City mayoral race, Mr. Mamdani, has said, many of those good faith, perhaps centrist conservatives would say, no way I can ever support that. So how do we continue to expand the tent to meet this moment while not alienating our most progressive friends on the left? These are the complicated questions of our time. And again, everybody's got a slightly different answer. My next guest for this entire hour is one of the smartest women I know, not just in politics, but just smartest women. She is a successful small business owner. She knows a ton about the economy and financial markets because that's what her business is. And she's been a very well-respected and highly regarded state senator here in Wisconsin. When she talks, I find myself nodding right along because she sounds like a human being, for one, and she sounds both like she knows what she's talking about and that the solutions that she offers for real policy problems are achievable and not just left-wing pipe dreams. Welcome back to the program, my friend and yours, State Senator Kristen Dostler-Alfheim. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Happy to be back, Maggie.
Let's just dive right in. It was a complicated budget process. I think it was complicated at a very basic level because the governor had never been in a position before where Republicans could have needed Democratic votes. We had better maps and so slightly more fair representation in the state Senate and Assembly, of course. And so, you know, again, his first navigation under those new maps. And what we saw was, I think, also Republican leadership not really understanding the new framework as well, thinking that they could ultimately, or hoping that they were going to be able to marshal unanimity and cram a budget through and tell Democrats to go pack their bags. How did this play out for you? We've had, and I gave my heartfelt congratulations and thanks to Senator Hesselbein for shepherding that. I think she's an incredible legislative leader. What was that for you, you know, up close and personal? And I don't mean to, you know, bring up what was very difficult and really down to the wire, but I think it's important for people to understand how this process actually plays out. You don't just, you know, exchange lists of your dream things like, "Dear Santa, this is what I'd like for Christmas." It doesn't work like that, does it?
Not really, no. I will say that, well, I think it was about 4 days after I was elected. We hadn't even been in, to the inauguration yet or signed in, sworn in. And we get an email that says, "Please have your budget priorities to the governor's desk by." And they gave us about 10 days. And as a freshman, I didn't even know that was coming. So there is a way that legislatures have to look at their communities and put in situations that their requests. So there are on paper things that we've needed for our community that the governor has and considers whether to put in his budget. And then the thing moves along. And the governor comes out with his budget. We sit there and listen to his presentation. We're all excited. And then very much we hear nothing. Nothing. Yeah. For months. Now, we weren't doing nothing. We were having listening sessions and town halls, and we were all over the place, and the public had a chance to tell us what was on their mind, and we listened and we took notes. Heard a lot at the listening sessions about education. Heard a lot about childcare, no doubt about it. But we wait for months and months and months. And as a freshman, as somebody who doesn't really know how it's supposed to work or how it's supposed to feel, I questioned why, you know, and then when we hear they're in negotiations, the governor made the choice to go into negotiations with the Republicans. Again, you know, that's his prerogative, right? This is not an anti-Tony mm-hmm. statement. It's just the path he chose. I think everybody knows that I questioned that. I had Zach Madden in my office, and I said, I'm not trying to cause trouble, but I don't understand why this would be the process. It was believed a long time ago, months ago, that the Republican Senate would need votes. One or two was the word. And I think that the thought of the governor's office, as well as the Republicans, were that they would just pick off one or two of us. And this is where Senator Hesselbein, leader with a capital L, truly, she pulled the caucus together and said, "No, we're not going to let that happen. We will not let that happen. They need us. It doesn't matter if it's one vote or if it's in the end five votes. We are going to work as one body and come up with a list of things that we want on there." Now, again, the general public and the Democratic Party would, of course, say childcare, you know, public education, all of these things, expanding Medicaid. We asked for all that. So did the governor. And those, we got as far as we got on that. But then we started putting in more things, you know, the capital for the UW, the ARIP for the rural bridge programs. So we basically made a laundry list of things that once we got to the table, we would be ready to ask them. And Senator Hesselbein did a great job, you know, not just in holding her own at that table, which I think is a massive, massive thing, but honestly, leading our caucus, because our caucus is different than it's been. It's much bigger. You know, we added in four voices. The four voices that were added are in the new map in competitive districts. We have a little bit of a purple mindset across the board. We want to do what's right for people and children, but we also understand that there is pragmatism that must take place. And she worked masterfully in handling that caucus along with Senator Spreitzer. So by the time we actually got to the table and got talking with each other, it was 10 days before the bill or before the budget was signed. It was 7 days, I believe, before Senator Hesselbein even got in the room to talk about any requests. Again, there are strategies that people choose to use that would not have necessarily been my strategy. And I shared that with the governor's office. I would have done that differently, but I'm not the governor. And so we did the very best we could in the situation that we're given.
What I find really interesting that has been, I don't think, explicitly discussed enough is, much like Senator Hesselbein did, facing a Republican-controlled legislature. Democrats weren't going to be able to go in there, slap down the list, and get every single item on the list. That was not, right. If that is your objective, what you're going to end up with is nothing. And the best alternative to no agreement, right, like your BATNA, which is a term used in negotiations, if you know that no agreement will actually be more harmful than the status quo, which is how I understand the budget would have operated without a budget or with a veto from the governor's office, that a bunch of temporary funding and things were literally peeling off, and it would have made things worse for there to be no agreement than what we had during negotiations, and certainly vis-a-vis what we've got now. Is my understanding correct?
Yeah, I mean, we were told very clearly, and I believe that most of us in the room agreed that the worst possible situation was going back to base or having no budget whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That was the worst possible option because childcare accounts had a hard stop.
Right.
It was coming to an end. There was no more money coming in. Where other things we might have been able to kind of tease our way through for an extra month or two, childcare accounts would have been dead, absolutely dead. So going back to base, there was a lot of harm that came from that. And again, in a perfect world, yeah, we could just wave a magic wand and the Republicans would say, okay, sure, you can have it. But that's not the way it works when they're in charge. They have the majority. They knew as well as we did that going back to base was better for them than it was for us, because it was going to hurt our programs more than theirs. And the longer it took to get the budget passed, the more Republican votes were peeling off. They went from needing one or two votes to needing four or five votes. They were leaning back into the idea of, let's just not have a budget then, because that would have been a win for the Republicans, not the Democrats. It would have been a loss, a harmful, harmful loss for the state of Wisconsin.
That is the piece right there. Yep. That reversion back to base would have been a big win for Republicans, caused enormous harm. It was not a salient alternative to an agreement for Democrats, frankly, because the people in our districts would have been caused a significant, acute amount of that pain. Folks, we're going to continue this discussion and move more broadly, throw our lens up more broadly. Is there anything else, Senator Dossler-Alfheim, that you want Wisconsinites to know about the budget? And frankly, just the concept of harm, sometimes harm avoidance and harm reduction, and the difficulty of actually building consensus across the aisle.
I think that we have to talk about expectations. You know, the public has done a fantastic job. The volunteers, the advocates have stood up and gotten loud in numbers about what we need to do for the state of Wisconsin, for our children, for our childcare situation. That is fantastic and it must continue. But being loud is not the same as having the expectation that we can just have everything. There's never going to be a situation where there is a complete 180 from where we are to where you would like us to go. We have to keep on asking. We have to keep on proving that it's the right choice. But change is the most difficult thing on the planet for people to deal with. That's the most difficult. So to go from here all the way over 180 doesn't happen. We have to work our way there. And if we're constantly disappointed because we haven't gotten all the way, we're beating ourselves up.
Folks, we're going to continue this discussion. Revolution, incrementalism, progressive left, centrists, how do we make it all work? Come back with us on the other side and join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In May, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that individuals, in this case Native Americans, do not have a private right of action in voting rights cases. An emergency stay was granted July 22nd, and it's likely headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2021, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, the Spirit Lake Tribe, and individual Native voters negotiated with the state of North Dakota to create voting districts that didn't dilute Native voting power. But after a 2023 Eighth Circuit decision in Arkansas, the state of North Dakota reneged on its deal with the tribes. That decision said only the U.S. Justice Department, not individual voters, could bring suits to enforce the provisions of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. In actuality, since 1965, individuals brought 90% of VRA cases. May 14th, a three-judge panel affirmed that individual voters cannot bring VRA cases, but it applies only in the Eighth Circuit. July 15th, the tribes and individual Native voters asked for an emergency stay from Justice Brett Kavanaugh, pending a full U.S. Supreme Court appeal request. The stay was granted July 16th. On the one hand, decades of precedent allow individuals to bring such VRA cases, but this high court's conservative majority often ignores precedent and seeks ways to neutralize VRA protections for minority voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Everybody, and welcome if you are just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great guest with us for the whole 5 o'clock hour because we're having what I call like the big talk. You know, back in the day when your parents would say, your mother and I or your father and I have something very important to discuss with you. And then they'd like sit you down at the dining room table. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. That kind of a talk. We're having the talk with State Senator Kristen Dostler-Elfheim about how Democrats pull together despite the differences between progressives and centrists, or as what President Obama recently called, quote, the left of the party and people who are promoting the abundance agenda, which I thought was really interesting. The president talking about the fact that, frankly, Democrats need to be less precious. We need courage, less navel gazing, less whining and being in fetal positions. Just today or yesterday, James Carville, longtime Democratic strategist, posted an article and a guest essay, I guess we should say, in the New York Times saying my fix for the confused and leaderless Democrats. You started to, before the break, Kristen, you were talking about expectations and the obligation for candidates to not set forward unrealistic expectations. And I think, you know, this idea of expectations and trying not to give people the sense that you can do absolutely everything on our wish list, that this is possible. You know, again, it's the poetry of campaigning, the prose of actual.
Folks, you ever just have one of those days where nothing seems to be working exactly how you hoped it would be? This is Jacob from Civic Media. Usually I'm a producer here for Maggie. We're having a little bit of technical issues, just keeping you abreast of the situation. It should only be a minute. And until then, enjoy this wonderful music. Maggie, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Welcome back to your show, Maggie.
Hey, fantastic. Listen, it is all good on live radio. We have been talking with State Senator Kristen Dusler-Alfheim. Kristen, you talked about the idea of expectations, and the framework that I use for this is rhetoric versus results. And my back always gets a little bit up when I hear candidates that critique current sitting elected officials because they haven't achieved every single thing on our Santa Claus or dream wish list, when they know that that is not possible. It always gets my back up when elected officials and candidates conflate rhetoric with the results that we're trying to see, or let rhetoric keep us from achieving very achievable results that will materially help folks. What do you think is important for voters and Democrats of all stripes, all across the spectrum, to be thinking about as we're going into 2026 and beyond?
Well, I think that if people understand, and again, I campaigned on the concept of that I believed in issues. I never once said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to that, because I knew I wasn't in control to make that happen. And I think that's the first mistake that candidates make. They say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. No, if you don't have the majority, you can't do anything. And anybody that has paid attention in Wisconsin knows if we can stand at every podium and list every bill that everyone would want us to put and submit those bills, and they're not getting hearings. If they don't get hearings, they have no opportunity to get to the floor. When we get to the floor, it's all Republican stuff. We can talk all day long about how we want to amend it. We try, we do this and that. In the end, they have the votes to pass it. So being realistic about the situation matters. Now, looking forward, if we understand the reason that we have not made progress on issues to the level that we would like, or at all in some cases, if we know that's because the majority has chosen not to let it work, then we now understand the importance of having the majority. The majority would allow us to bring these topics to the table. And that is a big deal. We must unite. And you talked about this earlier about the Big Ten. The challenge that we have is there's so much disappointment in the world right now. There's disappointment, there's anger, there's fear at a national level and a state level. And it has kind of overwhelmed everyone. The reality is that we have made progress in Wisconsin. We have elected Supreme Court members that we have had rulings come down that we have worked for over a decade. We have gotten new maps. Our maps have now gotten us to the table, and now the next set of maps or the next election will take us to the next level and have that majority.
I've got to hop in there. We're going to talk about what happens when the dog catches the car, when we keep getting better and better maps that are fairer and fairer, and we have actual representation in our state's legislature with State Senator Kristen Dossler-Alfheim when we return here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. This week in city government, the final round of property assessment objection hearings will be held today. The city administrator work group will meet tomorrow, as well as the Economic and Community Development Commission, which will get its regular updates on a number of commercial and residential projects going on around the city. Then it'll be a review session for the Redevelopment Authority on Thursday, as they work on items related to many of those same projects. The next Common Council meeting is August 14th. The Cooley region will see hot and humid conditions for the next several days. With tips on how to stay safe in the heat, here's Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The heat and humidity are building. It's time to be aware of signs of heat-related illnesses, and it can happen fast, which is why hydration is important. Here's what's happening. We're sweating more because the air is muggy and full of water, so it's harder to evaporate the sweat off of us, which that cools us down. So since our internal body temperatures can rise to unhealthy levels, it's why you should avoid strenuous activities in the high heat. Or be sure to keep an eye on your water intake. Avoid sugary drinks and alcohol, as those work to dehydrate you even more. If you start to feel dizzy, confused, or suddenly stop sweating, it's time to get inside and find some AC. Or find a fan, get in a shaded area, cool down. Because if you continue, heat stroke is possible. You could see stars, blackout, or throw up. Nearly 700 Wisconsinites have visited emergency rooms for heat-related illnesses last year, and 39 kids across the country died. Never leave them or pets inside of a car, because in just 20 minutes on an 80-degree day, the CDC says the inside of your car can hit 109 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Information on cooling centers in the area can be found on your city's website. You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now from your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. If you're looking for a whodunit that takes place in a beautiful setting, here's one of Pete's picks that will fit the bill. Untamed stars Aussie actors Eric Bana and Sam Neill and is set in Yosemite National Park. Bana plays a federal agent who oversees the park alongside state park rangers led by Neill. The first scene, which involves two rock climbers and a dead body, will knock your socks off. Bana's character Kyle Turner tracks a killer while dealing with his own demons. Untamed dropped July 17th on Netflix, where all six episodes are available to stream. Wes Anderson fans, listen up, yo. His latest effort, The Phoenician Scheme, will be available to stream later this week. Deadline.com has announced the film will drop on Peacock Friday, July 25th. The film by the director of Rushmore and Bottle Rocket is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and stars Benicio del Toro, Tom Hanks, Michael Cera, and Scarlett Johansson. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with a slight storm chance and a low in the mid-70s. Heat advisory tomorrow, heat index approaching 100, high-low 90s, a mix of sun and clouds, scattered storms. Storms still possible on Thursday. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
Can I sit in the front seat? Just this one time? Please, please, please?
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Joe Thomas grew up in Brookfield, Wisconsin, and had Hall of Fame football careers with the Badgers and Cleveland Browns. So what's his passion now? Well, join us Tuesday when Joe Thomas sits down with Brady Ewing and me for a special on-location show from Six Springs Farm, the home to Hall of Fame beef. Catching up with Joe Thomas, Tuesday. You're not going to want to miss it.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Wednesday, I'll be in Madison, and we'll talk about how declining enrollment in Wisconsin schools is exacerbated by state aid that doesn't keep up with inflation.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. My special guest for the entire hour is State Senator Kristen Dessler-Offheim. We're talking about the hard stuff of politics when you have a big tent party like the Democratic Party without a clear leader of the party, which is where Democrats find themselves at this moment. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat, over the past 10 years, the Republican Party has been led by one man, Donald Trump. And basically, the objectives of the Republican Party have been whatever Donald Trump has said they are. And one of the unique features, some would call it a bug, but I think features of the MAGA movement is enforcement of the party line, which is whatever Donald Trump's objective is, with amazing effect. I don't think you're ever going to see anything like that in the Democratic Party. That simply isn't who we are. I don't think it's what we want to be. But the question is, when faced with someone who poses such an acute threat to, well, pick a thing, how do you bring Democrats together? And Senator, you and I have been talking about this idea of, I always term it as results versus rhetoric. And yes, of course, rhetoric is needed during campaigns, but you're not making promises to people. You talked about, Senator, about talking about the issues that you think are most important and not promising a whole bunch of things that would be basically impossible to achieve in your next term or terms. But the issues that you center that are important for you, that you think are important to your constituents, do you think Democrats need to learn from that? Because I think there's a wee bit of trying to be everything to everybody all the time, and it ends up sounding like gobbledygook, over-messaged political, you know, crosstalk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have very, very loud conversations about ideals that we generally share. But I think we forget, all of those individual groups forget that we have to pull together to the center of that umbrella to actually accomplish things. And waiting for perfection. I'll give you an example. When I was running, I got a call from, or I did an interview with one of the conservation groups. And their question was, will you push for radical change or will you push for moderate change? And my answer was, there will always be a faction of people that are going to ask for everything. They're going to ask for the moon. The reality is that the more pragmatic and the moderate, it isn't that we don't believe that it should be done, it's that we know it isn't possible in the climate that we're in. So if they're asking, in any of these categories, if the extreme is asking for 10 steps, it is our job to convince our counterparts on the right that taking 4 to 5 of those steps right now is going to be good for us. And then validate that it is, so that we can take steps 6 and 7. That's the case with every topic right now. We can't just expect us to go from nobody's paying attention to we get everything as fast as we can. It doesn't work that way, and we can't make it work that way. And to be honest, the population, even though when I talk to my friends on the left, they believe that everyone believes 100% in everything that they do, it's not true. The bulk of the population is somewhere in the middle. They know it's a good idea, but they don't want to get too carried away. They're afraid of change. So the idea of going from ignoring science to going full on pedal to the metal to change it isn't going to happen. That doesn't mean we don't keep moving that direction. And again, if somebody is more of a moderate, that doesn't mean they don't believe wholly in the deep issues. It means they're more pragmatic in terms of where is society, how are we funding things, and how fast can we get there. We share the vision of the same end result, but we are more realistic in that the larger body, the people that we need to keep us in the majority moving forward, whether that's at a state level or a national level, are not all deep, deep blue people. They believe in science. They believe in people's rights. They believe in health care. They believe in those things, but they aren't ready to jump to the far end of that party. And yet we need them in order to take the step the right direction. Yeah. And it is the conundrum that we face. You know, it is not the deep left that wins elections. It is the center left and even those on the fringe of the right center that win elections.
Yeah, that's by the fringe, you don't mean the far right. You mean the center right, of course. Yes.
I mean the moderate, the classic person out there that has voted Republican all of their lives, but they now define themselves as fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Those are still Republicans. And those are the people that we must come back to our side to realize that what's right is right. Treating people, you know, with respect, no matter who they are, no matter where they come from, no matter how they choose to lose their life or live their life, that is what social awareness is. And there are far more Republicans that feel that way today than they have in the past, and yet we lost the national election. So if we continue to just scream for perfection on the far edge of our party, we are not allowing those that actually agree with us on at least 75 to 80% of our stuff to come over. They don't feel welcome because, after all, they didn't vote for our person. That's, to me, the challenge that we have to get past. If someone voted for Trump once or twice, I'm not willing to throw that person, that general person, in the garbage. I want to help them understand the rest of the story and see that they are still welcome to see the truth and to help us right the ship. And we can't do that if we wait for perfection and we scream because we haven't had that.
Folks, that is State Senator Kristen Dossler-Alfheim. So much there. This is, in many ways, the conundrum of my life, if you will. Like, I've spent much of my adult life, whether I was working as a lawyer in Wall Street or for the city of Milwaukee or Milwaukee County, or thinking about problems as an economist, and seeing how epic change is, even small change, how difficult that is. And the reality, I think, in many ways, is that retrenchment, what I call radical change that is regressive, radical change that destroys justice, that degrades people, that brings you closer to, fascism, all those isms and all these, that's, you can look at any system in the world, that's easy. That quote unquote easy, air quotes around that, right? That actually can be done. But the change, if you look at the course of history, change
that brings greater equality and equity of rights, greater access to institutions and economic mobility and doing better than your parents and being able to take a vacation and not be existentially worried, am I going to have enough to pay for rent and my prescription drugs and take care of my elderly parents. Those changes have generally come about in a much more incremental way. And people always point, well, the New Deal was, that came about through the most pointed economic hardship period, right? Like, unless you want, right. Do we really want to go through a recession and see people in breadlines? You know, in other words, when you have these incremental steps towards, I think, the things that you have aptly described as what I'm generically going to call shared values, more safe neighborhoods, cleaner water, cleaner air, greater opportunities mm-hmm. for our kids and our families. That yep. has largely been incremental. So maybe some in the party do want to sort of like torch the whole thing, but the problem is that will not win an election. It will not win a general election yeah. where you have to convince people who do not want anything to do with burn it all down.
Right. I mean, in the reality in this world is that everybody is selfish, right? We are. We as a family, any given family in Wisconsin, does not want there to be waste, and they want all the programs that they need to be there. So the reality is everybody has a very, very small vision in terms of what's necessary in the world. And when you expand that, the empathy that the Democratic Party has says it doesn't matter what you feel, it's what everybody feels. There's more to it than that. That is a learning opportunity. Comfortable people are complacent. Comfortable people don't realize that there is true pain and hardship around us in our own neighborhoods, and they don't realize it. They're not going to become empathetic when we continue to throw rocks at them because they're on the other side of the street, at the other side of the political world. We have to have more people realize that there is more good to be found in the Democratic way of looking at life. And the goal of that party is not to take away from everyone what they have. And that sometimes is how it feels. And that is part of the messaging that we as a party have to remedy. We cannot yeah. demonize any family that has found success in this state or this country. They're not the bad guys. And many of them are empathetic and want better things. But we cannot get the attention of everyone that we need to be paying attention. Again, if the only thing we do is scream them from the farthest edge of our party. Because that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of it. Because they're afraid they will have to give up what they have worked so hard for. So yeah. that's just psychology. It's the way that people function. And to be angry at that person.
Yeah,
it's not fair because they're protecting what they've worked hard for, and we sometimes make it feel that they must have cheated their way, or after all, they didn't have all of the hurdles to jump, therefore what they have isn't valid. That is the message that we share as a party very often from our platform, and that's part of our problem. It's part of our problem. We have to be able to pull people to our side, not push them to our side. And that is messaging, and it's marketing, and it's the way that we lead through this time. We cannot just be shrieking at those that did not vote the way we wanted them or they should have. We have to pull those people to our party by saying, here we are. And if there is an enemy in this entire thing, then make it very clear who it is and who it's not. And it is
and
not.
And who it's not. And who it's not. It is not regular Wisconsinites of good faith working hard for their families. I'm going to talk about the fallacies of zero sum and false scarcity with our special guest this hour, State Senator Kristen Dostler-Alfheim, as we explore how do Democrats move forward into 2026. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC.
join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In February of 2024, Governor Tony Evers signed new maps for the Wisconsin State Legislature into law, putting an end to one of the most extreme partisan gerrymanders anywhere in the country. While that was a momentous achievement for democracy in the state, that wasn't the end of the story. Since then, for more than a year, Fair Maps advocates and pro-democracy activists have been looking to take the next step and propose a new plan for independent redistricting in Wisconsin that would be here for the long haul. It's a compelling, well-constructed plan that would take the job of drawing maps away from the politicians who run for office on those very maps. In this new feature story, I take a closer look inside this citizen-led grassroots effort as it goes from the idea phase to being presented to the public. Because we absolutely need a long-term solution for redistricting reform in Wisconsin so we don't end up seeing either political party gerrymander Wisconsin's maps ever again.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's ice cream month, and did you know you can celebrate at this area stop along the state's ice cream trail? Here's the scoop.
Now, in Wisconsin, we've got 49 different licensed ice cream plants that are making it. But this map focuses in on unique stops in Wisconsin. Every one of them's got a story.
That's Pam Yonke, known as the Fabulous Farm Babe. She says the current trail includes 20 locations, each one from Hayward to La Crosse, Madison, and then north to Appleton, Green Bay, and Door County, dishes out delicious, locally made ice cream.
I've been to one or two, but I'm surprised by how few I've gotten a chance to visit, and I'm a pretty big ice cream fan.
Find the trail at the website gatherwisconsin.com and add your own local favorite there, too. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Matt Nair on Air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Your last chance to get in your comment or question or thought. I'm with State Senator Kristen Dessler-Alfheim. We're talking about the big challenge for Democrats in 2026 and beyond. So many people for so long in this country have been fed the Republican baseline that for anyone else to do better requires someone else to do worse. That's what I mean when I say zero sum. That everything is a win-loss transaction and there are only ever two sides. It's what we kind of get fed in the ephemera. And you couple that, it gets worse by the idea that we simply don't have enough. We don't have enough access. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough pharmaceuticals. We don't have enough housing. We don't have enough. There's not enough. So you have to fight for it in this very sort of dystopian, Hobbes-ish, dog-eat-dog way. And if that's the frame that sort of
implicitly runs through a lot of our culture, progressives have to be aware of the fact that what they offer up as the outcomes that they wish to see in the world is understood and heard by some as necessitating harm to themselves or their family, and they will never vote for it and never support it. Right. Senator, if am I getting that? It sounded like you were saying something along those lines. I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but that's one of the frames that I've used to try to understand this, is that if people are in a place of fear, and if they see the world as zero sum, and they believe that we have false scarcity, two things which I do not believe are true, you have to be very wary of the, oh, well, there's plenty, don't worry about it. Like, that won't sell well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, it's the perception. The perception of people for decades, our party, the Democrats, have used the fight against the wealthy, right? The wealthy has been the term used. But we forget the fact that so many people in middle America have come up in standing. They've come up financially from where their parents were or their grandparents. They've worked very, very hard. And in their minds, they are wealthy. So they think they're the target. And the Republicans have done a fantastic job of making middle America think that it's those below them that are coming to get their share. Well, yes. That's not true. That's never been true. So right. We as a party have to make sure that we are clear in our communication. There are lots of millionaires that live in the Fox Valley, and they're normal people. They're normal, hardworking people. They're not the problem. They're frugal. They have lived lean their entire lives and worked hard. They're not the target. Do we have wealthy, mega billionaires out there that have gotten away scot-free? Yes, we have. But we've not done a good job of identifying the corporate help that has been given, the tax breaks on the corporate side that are in double-digit profit range, the billionaires that a 1.5% tax cut to a billionaire or somebody making $10 million a year is a lot of money, which is why they fund the PACs we do. Because we have not specifically targeted in the last decade, we have not done a good job of pointing way up the hill where the problem is, to those that are so far, we will never understand the wealth that exists in this country. Yeah. We really won't. But the Republicans have done a fantastic job of making middle America feel that they're the target of all of these Democratic policies in a negative way, like we're there to take.
Yes.
It's not true. And yet it is what's believed. And until we can convince them otherwise, until our messaging is corrected so that we are looking to help the entire community, help all of us. When one wins, we all win. If we can start to change the messaging instead of trying to attack, we can actually pull people towards us. They have to be able to not identify as the target of these changes in a negative way. There are targets, and we should share clearly who they are and what they are so that we can have them come with us. Of all the things Republicans do, they message better than we do.
Oh, always
and
have.
We have to fix that.
Yes.
They have. They're more strategic. And so we have to, as a party, be careful of the only people that we're fighting for are the downtrodden. That adds to that fight.
Yeah.
We aren't just fighting for those who don't have. We are fighting for everyone, no matter where you are. You should have rights to have prosperity and success in the United States. And that does include those that don't have anything, those that have worked very hard. That is the umbrella. The umbrella is everybody that is a hardworking family member out there. And we're on their team. And that's leadership and that's communication. And my fear, as we work towards the majority, as we work towards, I'm not sure what's going to happen at the governor's level, but we need that chair. Whether it's Governor Evers or somebody else, it better be a blue chair, right?
Yep.
At a national level, we need a blue chair. We need fair maps. We need the majority. We have to have leadership that is capable of pulling people with them towards that vision. They have to be able to communicate it. And they have to mean it. It is a shared vision of the majority, the far majority of this country and this state, that we find success collectively.
Folks, I'm sorry. I know she'll come back on the show. I know we'll talk about this more. A shared vision of prosperity for every single hardworking American. That's what it's about. That's going to do it for me today. Big, big thanks to my friend and yours, State Senator Kristen Dosler-Alfheim. Always laying down the common sense. Can't wait to talk to her again. Can't wait to talk to you again. We got a special replay for you tomorrow because we got a big meeting in Madison for all the civic media folks. I'll be back on Thursday, folks. You take care. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche and former personal attorney for Donald Trump says he plans to meet with Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell. She's in prison for sex trafficking. ABC's Karen Travers has more.
The president said he doesn't know anything about it, but he said it sounds appropriate to him and that he had no concerns about it. He said he didn't know that they were going to do it, indicating that he had not been briefed before the Justice Department made that announcement. He also made some very wild accusations about the former president, Barack Obama, accusing him of treason related to the Russia investigation. Again, some very wild accusations there.
A spokesperson for former President Obama calls the claims, quote, outrageous. The State Department says Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is traveling to the Middle East for ceasefire talks as they progress. It comes amid reports of potential famine for civilians setting in Gaza. The Hamas-run health ministry reports 15 deaths due to hunger in just the past day. This is ABC News.